At times we are called upon in life to rejoice and weep almost at the same time. The Lord sees fit on certain occasions to combine the great highs and the great lows of our experience into a particular unified season. Such has been the case for our congregation in recent days. And as I looked at our newest little one last night, and gazed upon her little face and all the mystery of what lies ahead for her, I thought upon the words of verse 9 came to my mind when Jacob said unto Pharaoh, in answer to his question, the days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained unto the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage. There's truth in these words. It's not a classic answer. What do you say when someone asks, how old are you? I very much doubt that you answer as Jacob answered here. And yet, as I say, there is tremendous truth in these words. Here's a man that has had tremendous highs and tremendous lows. We'll consider some of that in due course tonight. But he has also had much time to think upon what life is all about and the experience of life, at least for him. He calls it a pilgrimage. It's not the be-all and end-all right here, right now. This is a pilgrimage. In other words, it's a journey. You're going to somewhere. This is not the last stop. And at times we are in danger of living our lives in such a fashion as if this is the last stop. All that matters is the here and the now. But that was not the case for Jacob. He understood. He had come to understand this reality. And he calls his time on the earth days. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been. Days. Never escaping the fact that our life is quantified by days. Teach us to number not our years, but our days. We number our years. That's what we do. We have our birthdays. And it's someone's birthday at present. We're thinking about that in relation to birthdays already today in BBS. But we tend to count them in that way. We think about them in years. But we are to number our days. We come into this world completely unaware of what God has for us. And so tonight, as we take three words to draw our thoughts together, and I trust in a helpful fashion, meditate upon some truth tonight, from the middle of verse 9, few and evil. Few and evil, and just two main points. First of all, the fewness of the days. The fewness of the days. Jacob compares his life to the lifespan of his father and his grandfather. His grandfather, Abraham, of course, had lived for 175 years. His father, Isaac, had lived for 180 years. And as the text tells us, at this present time, Jacob is 130. So he is fairly significantly away from the years that his father and his grandfather attained to. And by the language that he uses, it seems like he is not thinking, he's not imagining there's much prospect of him ever attaining to those years. He feels the weight of those 130 years. And he doesn't anticipate that he will live as long as his father or his grandfather had done before him. Now, we know from the history that follows, he lives an additional 17 years, but even living up to 147, he's still around 20% short of the years that were given to his father and his grandfather. So you count that up, even in terms of the lifespan that we have, 20% is not insignificant. He lived then a shorter life. But this is not always as bad as it seems. It isn't. Paul certainly spoke personally of his experience in relation to the end of this life and the entering into the next in Philippians 1:23, having a desire to depart and to be with Christ, which is far better. He had a desire. A desire to leave this pilgrimage and go into the eternal Canaan. But he also spoke in this similar fashion, not just personally, like a personal testimony, but applied it as it should be to all believers. Turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 5 for a moment. 2 Corinthians 5. Let's read the opening 8 verses. Let's follow along here. Paul says, 2 Corinthians 5 verse 1. For we know, and I was tempted, and maybe I will sometime in the near future, dealing with the things that we know, that we're meant to know, because what you'll find at times is that believers kick against the things we're meant to know. And Paul writes that, look, there, this is, we understand this. So we know these things, and we need to know them. Not just with our heads, but to live them out. And it's the same here. I mean, you know, like, there are very few here tonight who would disagree with what Paul has written here, but actually believing it is a grace that God alone can give. We know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God and house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our house which is from heaven. Note that, earnestly desiring. If so be that being clothed we shall not be found naked, for we that are in this tabernacle do groan, being burdened. Not for that we would be unclothed, but clothed upon, that mortality might be swallowed up of life. Now he that hath wrought us for the selfsame thing is God, who also hath given unto us the earnest of the Spirit. Therefore, we are always confident, knowing that, whilst we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. For we walk by faith, not by sight. We are confident, I say, and willing, rather, to be absent from the body, and to be present with the Lord. And here's my point. Paul's experience of Philippians 1, that was personal testimony, he now says is the testimony of all who walk by faith and not by sight. We are confident, I say, and willing rather, we believers, we regenerate, we who know Christ, willing rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. I know there can be that feeling of our work that needs to be done. And there's a mystery to that. There's a mystery. And I'm sure many of the older believers here are aware of those that have fought for a time in their existence because they felt like there was something still they needed to do. And on the flip side, maybe the same believers, or certainly other believers, who felt, even against all the kind of prayers of God's people and the desires of God's people around them, they said, no, this is my time. Well-known preacher James Montgomery Boyce had that opinion. He wasn't a particularly old man when the Lord called him away, and leading up to that, he told his congregation, don't pray for me that I might remain. He believed his time. His time had come. The Lord was taking him to higher service. There's a mystery in knowing that, in discerning that. And I can't apply what exactly one should feel in any given moment or experience in life. But how do we get to the point? This is a question. How do we get to the point of not lamenting the fewness of our days? Being able to say with Jacob, yes, few are the days of the years of my pilgrimage. but not lamenting that fact. Not feeling that we're in some way shortchanged. Turn to Genesis 5 for a moment. Genesis chapter 5. I was pondering this a couple of weeks ago. In relation to Enoch. Now, I'm not going to take time to read through the genealogy that we are given in this chapter. But if you were to take time, you will see that the people that are mentioned in Genesis 5 live a long time. And so at this stage, prior to the flood, there is this extensive, far more extended living experience upon the earth. So you have Adam, 930 years, and so on and so forth. They're all living above 800 years. And then you come to verse 23, where we were introduced to Enoch in verse 21. Verse 23 says, "In all the days," note that, days. See what the writer, see what Moses is pressing in upon us through the entire book of Genesis? The days. "All the days of Enoch were 365 years, and Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him." Now, of all the other men, it does not tell us that they walked with God. Now, some of them did. We know that Adam walked with God, for sure, and others that are listed here, it would seem that they also had a testimony and walked with God, given the details that we have. But with Enoch, we have this emphasis. It's like underlined, and the question is why? Why underline that Enoch, specifically, out of those in this time frame, walked with God? And why then? I think there's no coincidence in the fact that the Spirit of God highlights he walked with God and also lived about less than half as long as everyone else. "365 years, God took him." Why? Why? I don't know. I can't be dogmatic, but I've been musing on this. I wonder if what the Spirit of God is highlighting here in Enoch's experience at a time when heaven was more shrouded in mystery, when there was less understanding of what happens after this scene of time. Here we have a man that meditates on the future a lot. That's what he preaches about. Jude tells us that. Jude records the details of his preaching. I thought I had it here. Maybe I don't. Let's turn over there. I intended to put Jude's little introduction to Enoch's preaching. I must have left it out accidentally, but here we'll find it for you. In the little epistle of Jude before the book of Revelation. I think it's around verse 14 or so. Yes, verse 14. "And Enoch also, the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these, saying," and he's talking about the wicked that are to come, "Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of the saints to execute judgment upon all, and to convince all that are ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds which they have ungodly committed, and of all their hard speeches which ungodly sinners have spoken against him." So, here's his preaching. He is preaching about the Lord coming with 10,000s of his saints. Here he is preaching about the Lord's second advent. In other words, the mind of this man, through the Spirit in his life, is drawn to think about the end of time. And as he walks with God, he is brought to, this is where I'm maybe stepping into the area of the license to imagine why the Scripture is dealing with these details and giving these details. that he walks with God and he lives less than half as long as everyone else. That this is a man so taken up with eternity and a view to eternity, as he walks with God, he realized the sweetest experience he has this side of glory is his fellowship with God. There's nothing sweeter. And as the Spirit teaches him what to preach and points men forward, and he gets some measure of insight into what is to come, he realized that the sweetest experience he is ever going to have lies ahead of him. And here's a man who begins to pine. He pines for sweeter fellowship, for deeper experiences with his God. He is longing, anticipating the day when he can walk with his God without the burden of sin. And if I'm right, then, Enoch walked with God, and he was not for God took him. God took him in answer to his own desire. He had a longing. Oh, what must it be like? This man is meditating. As he walks with God, he is meditating constantly on what is to come. And he is so taken up with the themes of eternity that God sees his heart break in longing and pining for glory. And the Lord, in his mercy, reaches down in some way that remains a mystery to us, whisks him into his presence, gives him the desire of his heart. Oh, Enoch was not lamenting the fact that his life was half as long as everyone else's. The fewness of his days were sweetened by his walk with God, and then in the realization that what he loved most was the presence of his God. And yet it was somewhat hindered by this fallen nature, this body, this flesh, the ignorance. He longed for a day where all the hindrances were gone. So God gave him eyes. Submit to you. God gave him the desire of his heart. Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Living half as long or less than half as long as everyone else. And this then, beloved, is how we deal with the fewness of our days. It's a pilgrimage. But as Jacob had to learn through hard and bitter experience, it's a pilgrimage where God is continually driving you to himself. Of course, Jacob, if we know his life, he was battling this. He was not always as receptive to God as he ought to have been. So his days were few. But we anticipate and deal with the fewness of our days by longing for what is to come. But note also the evil of the days. Few and evil, he says. Few and evil. Jacob speaks of his days being evil. Now, I do not think this is really in reference to his own sinfulness. I don't think that's his point. It's not that he would deny his sinfulness, but I don't think that's the point that he is making. It's more a reference to the difficulties of his life. They have been evil days, or hard days, bitter days, difficult days, because of the condition of this world. You think of all that he had to endure. The hatred of his brother over the matter of the birthright. The shameful treatment he received from his father-in-law, Laban. The long years of servitude for his wives. The resentment that he had to live with between his wives. The hatred of his sons towards Joseph, the loss of Joseph, the rape of Dinah, the massacre of the Shechemites by two of his sons, Reuben's incest with one of Jacob's wives, the years of famine that eventually would drive them to Egypt for help, the imprisonment of Simeon, Jacob's horror upon learning that Benjamin also would have to go, and the anxiety that that caused him. And this was Jacob's life. Any one of those is a tremendous hardship. Any one of those could embed bitterness into the soul. My brother hates me. My father-in-law mistreats me. Any of these things may be difficult for any one of us to handle. So here you have a man who had power with God and with man, but had not power over all his circumstances. Such is life. If you read the record, you will learn that his father, Isaac, prayed Jacob into existence, but he could not pray him to evade the evil of life. Which compounds then what our Lord teaches us in his prayer: deliver us from evil. Few and evil are the days of the years of our lives. So, how do we deal with this fact that our life is few in terms of its length and evil in terms of its substance? I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. This is life. You can paper over it. You can ignore it. You can reframe it. But few and evil really is the experience of man. The non-spiritual man won't realize this, of course. The person that's not spiritual is less inclined to see this. Life is short to the man who looks for an existence in eternity. Life is evil to the man who looks for an existence where there is no sin. So what's the best counterattack to this? Jacob says, few and evil have the days of the years of my life been. Few and evil, and so it is for you. What is the best counterattack? Well, I come back again and think upon what God had told and taught Jacob himself, that life is a pilgrimage. You're on a journey. And combine it with the explicit language of Enoch's existence. His also was a pilgrimage. And that pilgrimage was to walk with God. That's what we're called to do, to walk with God. And to walk with God with an eye to future judgment, as Enoch was preaching, and all that is to follow. Go back again to where we read, where Paul wrote about this matter of going to be with the Lord in 2 Corinthians 5. Go back there. We stopped at verse 8. I want to read the next few verses. So you see that Paul also as he considers the groaning, the being burdened, verse 4, that's this earthly house. It will be dissolved. And so he, as we read the opening 8 verses, he rather to be present, be absent from the body, and to be present with the Lord. That's the desire. That's what we long for. So how do we deal with the evil and the fewness of our life? What's the exhortation that Paul gives? Well, verse 9. Wherefore we labor, that whether present or absent, we may be accepted of him. Well, how do you do that? How do you do that? You walk with God. That's your goal. To be accepted of him. Walk with him. That's what, when you see two people walking together, you can make a reasonable assumption that there's the relationship is good. One accepts the other. And we want to be accepted of him. Now, I know, I understand justification, the perfection of our justification in Christ. I understand all of that. So does Paul. But you can see that that's not what he's contemplating in this passage. That's not that aspect of the gospel that is upon his mind. So wherefore we labor, that whether present or absent, we may be accepted of him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. This is what Enoch was preaching. He was preaching the same thing. Paul is following in the line of the man who was seventh from Adam. We must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad. Knowing therefore the terror of the Lord, we persuade men. We go after others. What are we telling them? What are we telling them? You also must walk with God. Nothing matters in your life if you don't walk with God. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. I don't care a whit about anything that you have achieved or you think is great and wonderful. If you do not walk with God, you've missed the boat, the mark. You've failed to get what you're here to do. All the accolades are nothing. They don't mean anything. And so I can have long years and great success. But so what? So what? It will come to an end, and I must stand before the judgment seat of Christ, that everyone may receive the things done in his body according to that he hath done, whether it be good or bad, knowing therefore the terror of the Lord. This is no light business. This is no trifling matter. This is real. This is man standing before God. Enoch the seventh from Adam preached with his heart aflame, with this burden, this fire of eternity burning in his soul. And no one else could see it. No one else could see it. They all just drifted along. They were quite happy to live 900 years. They were content because they were ignorant. They were ignorant of the life to come. No man who is aware of the life to come wants to be on this earth 900 years. You don't. You do not. Who wants to go through the weary, evil experience of this life when there's one to come that is without that burden? It doesn't have those concerns, those cares, fears and tears, pains. Why would you want to live 900 years when that's ahead? No, Lord. I'm willing rather to be absent from the body, present with the Lord. So we tell ourselves this. Wherefore we labor. Whether present or absent, we may be accepted of him. Yes, we're walking with him. We're walking with God. Because we're going to stand before the judgment seat of our living Redeemer. Receive from him according to what we have done, whether it be good or bad. That's going to happen. And Paul immediately then, his mind goes to the terror of the Lord. Knowing therefore, knowing the sober reality of this, we persuade men. So we walk with God. And we teach others to do the same. Well, there she is. Little life born into the family. Few and evil will be the days of the years of her pilgrimage. Yes, they'll be few and evil. And she realizes that her whole existence is to walk with God. Not only will she make profitable those few and evil days and years, but she will quite readily let go of these few and evil days and years. Willing, rather, to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. Parents, teach your children that. Teach them that. Don't get so caught up in the six-figure salary. Oh, you're so gifted. You're so gifted. You could do anything. Yes, they could do anything and fail to walk with God. Make sure they know that this is it. And then maybe the Lord will be pleased, like Enoch, to take them early. And we will mourn. And rightly so. We will mourn. They're passing. Because no one wants to lose an Enoch who exemplifies what you're meant to be. No one wants to lose a person like that. Those of us that remain don't want to lose the Enochs. We want the Enochs to remain because they help us understand why we're here. But their hearts break and pine for another world. And eventually, when their work is done, and it may be abbreviated, they have so labored. They have condensed what you and I may need 3 lifetimes to achieve, but they have so labored walking with God, they have condensed it into a few short years, and the Lord finally says, come, be with me. Yes. And all those little children sitting with us this week, who's telling them this? The world's message to them is the total opposite. Oh, maybe get through to them and get through to their own children. And may the Lord help us to ponder these things and walk with Him for Christ's sake.